6000 for 10,000.
270, climb to 12,000, South 1063.
Frequent Flyer, here it is, Thursday, March 28th, 2024. Big friggin' day here for the Philadelphia Flyers news. Got some reinforcements on the way. They're playing like crap against the Canadians. And all kinds of other stuff to get into. A lot of stuff to get into. We always got stuff to get into. That's what we do around here. And to help me get into said stuff, my co-host for the evening, Mike Aceto, is back as always. Mike, how's it going?
Good evening, gentlemen. It's great to be with you. I'm feeling a notion of perestroika here, referring to the economic restructuring of the Soviet Union in an attempt to end the era of stagnation. We have some movement with Sir Ivan Fedotov. So, yes. See, if the wind of change is coming and we might be getting a goalie. So, we'll see.
And Manny Benavides is here, as always. Manny, how's it going?
Salutations and greetings, gentlemen. Always great to be with you both, especially on a momentous occasion like this. Happy Easter to all of you out there that celebrate. And for those of you that don't, just a little bit of a primer here. You know, Easter is a very solemn time, a time of reverence where we ponder and think about our Lord and Savior Ivan Fedotov has risen.
Yeah,
apparently,
supposedly. Yeah, well, the story is that his contract with CSK Moscow has been terminated after 1 year, and he is on his way to Philadelphia. That's the rumor anyway, word has it. Apparently, so Breer was asked about this today because the news broke right before he talked to the media, and he did not comment on it one way or the other. Apparently, Friedman alluded that this is kind of very in the early stages here, so they're not trying to upset the balance of anything yet. Because, you know, they could always change their minds if they really wanted to. It's Russia. The rules of life don't apply over there at the moment. So, you know, got them, and then Alexei Kolosov coming over as well. Sounds like a visa issue is hanging his arrival up for the time being. By the time you hear this episode, when it goes up over the weekend, maybe he may be here for all we know. Who knows? But that is the word now. They're getting some help with the goaltending, and, you know, fans have been mercilessly shitting on Sam Ersson for weeks now after they demanded him back in December. Believe it or not, they broke their toy and they want a shiny new one. Well, they're getting two shiny new ones. And if they're Russian compadres here, Fedotov and Kolosov, and where they ultimately fall in, who's playing in the NHL, what goes on. I mean, you're running out of, I think the Flyers only have 8 games after this Canadiens one. So don't have a ton of time here to work either one of these two really into the NHL. But if they can, you know, give Ersson a break without having to a guaranteed L with Peterson and or Sandstrom be backing him up, it's the way to go. So we'll see how this continues to develop. But, you know, overall, good news here for the goaltending front, considering before today, you know, the only thing they had going for them was Ersson and Cal Peterson. You know, it seems like both Kolosov and Fedotov will be here at least next season and maybe even this year. So overall, a trend and a progress for what was considered a very precarious position they were in with the goaltending not all that long ago.
I'm pretty shocked that this news came down, actually. I mean, we talked about the Fedotov situation, what, probably like a year ago, maybe? Like
it's
a year
been
and a half
two-year
ago?
Two-year storyline right now.
Maybe a two-year storyline. And, you know, given all of that happened in Russia with the military service and the documentation that was or wasn't there, was forged or wasn't forged, it seemed like Ivan Fedotov was basically going to be punished for the rest of his life by staying in Russia, and whether or not he even played hockey again was in question. And it does look like that there are no roadblocks or obstacles right now, at least from what the reporters are saying. So this is going to happen. I mean, I'm pretty shocked. I think overall, when you look at it from a bird's eye view, it's a significant move. Ivan Fedotov was a very, very capable goalie in the KHL. Had some very good seasons over there, still relatively young. I don't recall how old he is, but he's definitely still in his
27.
20s. Okay. So that's perfect. Yeah, I think that he will probably acclimate well to the NHL, assuming he acclimates culturally. And I think it's a big move for the Flyers. Definitely helps them solidify the position. You know, if he can play at all the rest of this season, and particularly over the next several seasons, as he would be on in ELC. I'm not even sure what his contract situation would look like coming here.
So his contract is up at the end of the year. He was on a one-year deal that got told to this year because he was abducted last year. And then they didn't make it this year. So, and he's 27. So he's a UFA at the end of this summer. But assumingly, since he's coming over, they clearly have something in place, you know, to keep him under contract for the, you know, next few years at least. So assumingly he gets some kind of extension. But yeah, this was the last year of his deal. I assume it's not getting told again. So, you know, they got to figure out something. But again, if they're bringing him over, I guess they've got something up their sleeve as far as an extension goes to keep him in. But yeah. That's the contract situation at the moment.
Yeah, the interesting thing for me, well, first of all, like, I think it's congratulations are in order to Ivan Fedotov, because everything that I have seen before said he wanted to come to North America.
Yeah.
And then after the whole abduction fiasco and the trial and everything, all of a sudden there was statements out there, probably made under duress based on how the Russians interrogate their prisoners and whatnot, which we've seen in the last week or so. Basically he's him saying he's super happy at CSKA Moscow, and I'm just glad he's gonna get a chance to do what he wants to do, which is you know what, he's done the KHL thing, he's won the Gagarin Cup. He's been, you know, the top goaltender in that league for a few years now. He needs a new challenge. And, you know, you don't want to go through life saying woulda, coulda, shoulda. Now he's actually going to get a chance, hopefully, to be here sooner rather than later. The thing with the Flyers and the fans is I just hope that people temper expectations for both Fedotov and Kolesov, because people are already proclaiming, you know, that the savior has arrived. Mm-hmm. And listen, let's just be happy that they're both here and that they're both coming here. And that's the important thing. Like, I think everybody forgets the rebuild, and it seems like everybody wants to win the Stanley Cup this year for whatever reason, which isn't going to happen. I hate to break news here. But the one thing that I think that the Fedotov situation does do is we've talked on this show about how absolutely pathetic and putrid the free agent market is, especially for goaltenders. There's a lot of question marks where I think we all agreed that, like, Anthony Stolarz was, like, probably the best option, or at least a top two or three option. I think that that kind of puts that to bed. And I think that it's at least helpful that Briere doesn't have to spend any time potentially looking into the free agent market to sign a goaltender, because we've got a couple of them here, and hopefully they can see what they can do here in North America.
You don't have to find a Band-Aid in the off season. You know, if Stolar stayed in Florida, which I don't know if he's doing or not, but you know, if it wasn't Stolarz, it's a one other random guy that's probably no better than Sandstrom or Peterson right now. So having these two, you know, and listen, there's a chance neither one of them end up being good, right? It's always a possibility when, you know, international talent come to the NHL. But you've got two chances now to not screw that up. One of these guys has to be semi-competent, right? So, yeah, it does help that they don't have to address that. They don't have to give up assets in a trade to try and find a decent backup. Like, for now, the position is theoretically taken care of once again.
So Fedotov was drafted almost 9 years ago.
2015. Yeah.
2015, seventh round pick. Ron Hextall era. Absolutely crazy. We have a Hextall pick that is surfacing from the grave, it seems like, that's coming to the Flyers. Yeah, I think that Fedotov, I think, will be a contributor on the scene. That's a great point, Manny. It alleviates this need to bring in a goalie from outside the organization for next year. I don't think Felix Sandstrom is in the cards for the Flyers, at least for the big club, next year. And you get a tandem with Fedotov and Ersan. I think that's pretty damn good. And then I think the plan with Kolosov isn't it to get him experience with the Phantoms for probably 1 or 2 years. I mean, I think that would probably make sense. I'm not sure if he's going to be competing for an NHL job with the other guys. I guess he could during camp, but given his age and experience level, I would think he's more suited for the Phantoms, assuming he's eligible to go to the AHL.
That was the problem with Kolosov in the first place. Before Fedotov, this news broke, it was Kolosov. Everyone's Kolosov to come over and start in the playoffs for the Flyers, you know? And it's like, the guy's 22.
It's crazy.
You know, what this does is Fedotov, you know, I don't think he's going to be waiver eligible because of his age. So theoretically, it's Ersan and Fedotov in the NHL, and that gives Kolosov the opportunity to develop in the AHL next year as a 22-year-old, 23-year-old, I don't know when his birthday
is perfect.
Off the top of my head. Yeah, and you give him that time to develop and grow, and there's no pressure to rush him into the NHL, which is what should be happening here. So again, it works out very well, all things considered, and I'm going to fuck up Fedotov and Kolosov. Can we get some kind of different name around here?
Molotov. Molotov cocktails coming. Yeah. So anyway, if you look at Fedotov's stats with Cisco, he's pretty good. I mean, he was only 21-22-1 with a 2.37 goals against average, a 914 save percentage. I mean, it's not blow you away numbers, but I think that's pretty solid for the KHL, especially how crazy his life has been over the past couple of years. And he's a pretty big guy, isn't he?
Six foot eight. Yeah,
he is a mammoth of a human being. He just kind of sit down on the ice and is going to be blocking pucks just with his body and pads.
His body alone takes up the square footage of the net. Yeah.
That is wild. I don't think the Flyers have ever had a goalie quite that big.
I think he's the tallest goaltender. I believe Ben Bishop was 6'7". So I think he should be the tallest one. He's listed at 6'8", 212 right now, which is rather skinny for that height, but 6'8". I believe Kolosov is a more normal size human being. And
yeah.
Alexei Kolosov currently listed at, if the page wants to load, 6'185". So he's a more normal human size, where Fedotov's a full person taller than he is.
So what kind of contract do you think the Flyers give him? Like, he's got to sign now for the rest of the year, or what was going on with that? Because he had a contract with the Flyers that the KHL was defying. And I think the IIHF ruled that it was valid like a year or two ago. And the KHL said, screw that.
Ruled in May of 23 that it was valid. So he should have been there this year and he wasn't, because the KHL and RIHF said, no, fuck you, we're keeping this guy.
Yeah.
So Fedotov and Kolosov this season in 23-24 are both on 925,000 ELCs. So next year, Kolosov, I assume if he plays, it burns a year off his ELC even if he's in the AHL. I'm not entirely sure if that would slide or not. But either way, he's on an ELC for two more years. Fedotov is a UFA at the end of this year. So I don't, you know, I just did a show with Dylan right before this one started, and he asked the same question. Like, how are they going to handle this one? And I mean, I can't imagine he's going to get paid multi-millions of dollars or anything like that, but I don't think he's going to make another, you know, less than, you know, a million league minimum kind of thing. So I don't know. I mean, they did give Ersan 1.4 mil off of his ELC. So, I mean, they clearly gave him some kind of raise that they probably didn't have to. So I would not be surprised if he makes one and a half, maybe even 2 million for 2 or 3 years just to see what they have in the guy. Treat that as kind of his ELC kind of thing before they pay him.
Like a bridge.
Yeah.
Like a bridge deal or something. Because I think you can. I mean, I can't imagine that he completely bombs in the NHL. He's been pretty damn successful in the KHL.
He shouldn't be
terrible. Yeah, he shouldn't be terrible. So, you know, if I'm the Flyers, I might consider rolling the dice a little bit on a longer term deal with the lower AAV, not like an 8-year deal or something, but something more than 1 year. So you potentially can take advantage of that. And then if you still have Ersan is, what the heck is he going to be? I don't know if Cap Friendly pulled up right now. What do they have him as an RFA or something headed into next season?
Ersan has 1.4 until 2026, so 2 years.
Okay.
And then he's an RFA at the end of his deal.
Okay. They're in good shape then.
Yeah, I mean, they're still not, you know, the thing with Hart, you know, or talking, if he did not get, you know, arrested, you know, his extension was probably going to be pretty friggin' massive. He was probably looking at an 8x8 contract. So all of a sudden, you know, with that off the books, and now even with Fedotov and Kolosov here, your money's, you know, $2-3 million total tied up into goaltending for the immediate future here, which is not bad. It definitely helps. It's a ball they can just punt down the road for 2 or 3 years and deal with it. So yeah, they do get a little bit of financial help from their young, inexperienced goaltending core.
So I'm trying to look up, because I've seen some people talking online about how, you know, Fedotov is going to want to sign and he's going to demand, you know, a pretty decent raise because he was making big money in the KHL. But I don't know. There's an article here on Broad Street Buzz, and it says he signed a 2-year deal with CSKA Moscow worth 50 million rubles, which is $548,000 in July of 2023.
Inflation.
So basically his ELC, I don't know if that's correct, that number or not, but I know that the ruble has fluctuated wildly over the last couple of years because of the conflict and everything else. But at least if you're Fedotov, you're guaranteed, you know, almost $1 million now until the end of this season. And then July 1, he's a UFA. It would be interesting to see how much priority the Flyers give to actually trying to sign him, especially since they want to exclusively negotiate with him now. Otherwise, if you're Ivan Fedotov, how confident would you be that, hey, some team out there will give me as a free agent? I can pick my spot and I can get, you know, maybe a little bit more. Who knows?
It's about $540,000. Yeah. It's
which makes sense for the KHL. I mean, I don't have a strong grasp on what their players make, but it's a little bit less than NHL players. And if it's somewhere around that 500 mark, that would probably make sense.
That's about 400,000 less than he makes in his ELC. So it's a step. I mean, I did wonder that myself. I mean, I assume if the Flyers are bringing him over that he's going to commit to the Flyers, but there is the possibility he's a UFA technically. Like, there's nothing stopping him from coming to North America, playing one game for the Flyers, and then leaving an unrestricted free agency over the summer. And that, I mean, that would be true Philadelphia Flyer fashion.
That'd be
here.
Amazing.
That would be like totally on brand for him to
so
leave.
Like the Avalanche or something. Wins cups like crazy. Yeah,
he goes to the Devils.
Yeah, goes to the Devils and puts up Marty Brodeur numbers for the rest of his career. God damn it. Why'd you put that
there
thought
might
in my
be,
head?
Yeah, there might be some level of goodwill. Not that that can be relied on completely, but I think that given the Flyers drafting him and signing him and the impetus to bring him over, there may be some level of goodwill that's established with him where he would try to give the Flyers priority during a negotiation. Or if he's starting to think about other teams, I think he would say, look, my preference is probably in Philadelphia. What can we do here first? And if that doesn't work, then he'd go elsewhere. And the Flyers are in a good position to sign him. They're not going to be completely right up against the cap anytime soon. So I think they have a little bit of wiggle room for him if they want to throw in a little bit of extra dollars or an extra year or two on the deal. As long as it's not like an 8x8. Do not do that. But
yeah, I can't imagine he's demanding, you know, super insane amounts of money here. But, you know, I would think 2 or 3 year deal with a 2 or 3 mil AAV would be right within reason. Probably two by two, see what he's got. And then if he ends up being, you know, overthrowing Ersan for the starter role, then you deal with them that down the line somehow.
Yeah.
Does it matter much to you that they haven't seen him play in North America yet on the North American ice, and the fact that he, everything that he went through in the last, you know, 18 months or whatever, Do you try to sign him right like immediately, or would you rather get him to see you know, a couple of AHL games under his belt and maybe even an NHL start? Who knows?
I mean, if you could, I at this point, there's just not enough time. One or two starts, I don't think, deters from the monetary value of when the deal is that low. If it, 2x2, you know, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
You're giving more money to Nick Seeler at that point than you are Ivan Fedotov. So,
I'll ask this question then. Now that these two guys are reportedly on their way to Philadelphia, and Kolosov and Fedotov, does this make a Cal Peterson buyout more likely? Mm.
Question. And then, well, I guess the first step in that analysis is, what does the buyout look like?
Hold on. I mean,
so we'll have to plug that into the old algorithm here.
Yeah, break up my abacus and fingers.
Can we get Ivan Fedotov to just sit on them for like an hour?
Peterson's buyout would cost the Flyers $1 million in 24-25 and $2 million in 25-26.
See, that would work out because those two guys, well, Fedotov would be making, you know, $2 million or so. And then Kolosov's on an ELC, so that might actually make a lot of sense.
And you know, I've brought this stat up before.
I would do that for sure.
It cost the Flyers $3.8 million to bury Peterson in the AHL, which is, you know, that's enough to sign Fedotov and consider for Kolosov's cap. And they can do that for that. So, yeah, I would assume they buy Peterson out if they can secure Fedotov and Kolosov. They both step foot on North American soil. Yeah, I would assume that just about guarantees they buy out Peterson and then find literally anybody besides Cal Peterson to tandem with Kolosov in the AHL next season. It is the smarter play here, yeah.
I think they probably do that. The one thing that is going to become a problem now is when you start to add this buyout to the probable Atkinson buyout and then add it to all the other dead money that this team has, this is going to start to get a little higher than I originally had thought it was, because I was hoping that, as Manny had kind of brought up, that this kind of closes the door on the need to bring in another goalie that is competent in the offseason who you'd have to pay. So that's great, but the problem is now if we consider more buyouts, we're going to add to that dead money spot. So is that going to restrict this team in terms of accumulating other players, which would be great if they did?
Yeah, and yeah, we talked about this on one of our recent episodes. If they buy out Peterson, Johansson, and Atkinson, factoring in D'Angelo and Hayes on the books for next season, it's about $10 million dollars in dead cap.
That's a lot. Yeah.
You know, especially when you have the Konechny extension lingering there. They got Tyson Forrester at the same time, Cam York. So, you know, they got some contracts to deal with here over the next 2 years. And again, individually, those numbers aren't bad. $1 million, $2 million, give or take, all three are right around the same range there. But collectively, with the dead cap that's already on the books, and the fact that 8-point-something million of that would hang over for 25-26 as well, yeah, it's a very interesting route they take here in terms of who they buy out, if anybody. And, I mean, there's arguments for all three. There's all three of them collectively. But, you know, they do kind of tie their hands a little bit when it comes to just in-house extensions before even considering adding a top center in free agency or something like that. Just taking care of their in-house shit over the next 2 years gets a little more difficult with $10 million in dead cap on the books.
And then in terms of sequencing all that, what about the Ryan Ellis situation? Isn't there a time in the sequence where, like, they have to factor him into the cap before they move him to LTIR or something? Like, there's some sort of...
He needs to be on the opening night roster financially or something like that before he can get put on LTIR or whatever the rule is, mm-hmm. something like
it's
that.
Something like that.
Yeah. He doesn't apply to the 10% overage or whatever it is. Yeah.
I mean, that's a big deal, too, because his number's so damn big.
6.25 for three more years of Ryan Ellis.
Hey, Ivan, we got a favor to ask you. You're going to go on a road trip with Ryan Ellis, and we're going to give you a shovel. You know what to do. Not telling you what to do. You know what to do.
We're also going to be giving you a box of cannolis.
I'd do it for a box of cannolis, quite frankly. Has anybody, is Ryan Ellis like around? Was he at the carnival? Was he like around? Is he part of his team right now? Or is he just like.
He can't show his face, can he?
Yeah, I know. Did somebody dunk him in the dunk tank with his bad hip?
Is he just living like back in Nashville with his family or something? He doesn't even
heckle the shit
about
out
players.
Of him. You are a loser! Loser! You suck!
Oh my God.
I can't imagine. Yeah, it's like he has no interest in participating with this organization.
Who has better foot speed right now? Ryan Ellis or Sean Couturier?
Ooh,
it's got to be Ellis.
That would be it. I would love to see, like, you know, those like pros versus Joes kind of.
I'm gonna
like,
put that on Twitter actually right now.
Yeah. Who's
great
got
poll.
Better foot speed? Yeah. Coots. Coots or Ellis? Your thoughts.
Yeah, with I mean, both have very minimal mobility when it comes to the hip section. So one of them's still on the roster playing and the other one is doing God knows what.
Let's see what people have to say about that one.
Yeah.
It's got to be Ryan Ellis, right? He can't possibly be slower than Sean Couturier.
I don't know. Guy hasn't probably skated in a while, but I'd like to see that one.
Skated in a while with one hip. Sean Couturier, I don't know. Ugh.
So speaking of Coots, what have you guys thought about, speaking of, yeah, the captain, what have you guys thought about, you know, obviously he was benched for a couple of games earlier in March. The team played fairly well without him. He's returned, and the team has played okay with him. But, you know, I still have been noticing, and I've been seeing some, you know, problems with Sean Couturier for a while in terms of his ability to keep up with the pace of play, what he does in offensive zone or lack thereof, his overall skill level, some of his reads. I wasn't feeling this superstar, all-star type of player at all. Whereas a lot of other people are. And I don't know, how do you guys see the team, you know, with him versus without him in March so far?
Yeah, there's a question I feel like I asked when they scratched Couturier on Twitter. You know, could if you did not know that he was not in the lineup, would you even notice that he wasn't there? You know, would you really be like, oh man, Sean Couturier is missing from the lineup tonight? You know, it'd be like turning on the Oilers and saying, oh, McDavid's not in the lineup. Would you notice? Yeah, you'd fucking notice McDavid isn't there. You know, Couturier playing 4C for 10 minutes a night, you know, it doesn't make a difference to the team one way or the other. The only reason, and, you know, he was scratched a few days after our previous batch of recordings, but, you know, the only reason this drew the attention that it did is because he was named captain 34 days before they scratched him, you know, out of the blue, which is a whole goddamn different problem that this team had. But yeah, I mean, from an on-ice perspective, who gives a shit whether Sean Couturier is here or not? Like, I'm sure, you know, the faceoffs probably without him were poor. I would assume if you dig into the micro stats, you know, things like the penalty kill and team defense were probably worse without him. But on the whole, it doesn't matter. Whether Couturier's in the lineup at this point or not, it just doesn't matter.
He doesn't create offense, nor does he produce points. So when you take that out of somebody's game, you know, you're not really going to notice them that much, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, like, can he win faceoffs? Yeah, but then, you know, can he play defense the way that he used to? I'm sure he does at times. But yeah, then the offense is missing. Like that's the whole thing that's missing with this team is you need that center that can kind of do all three or at least two of them at a pretty high level. And we don't have that. Like you look at some of the teams out there that the guys that they're talking about for the Selke this year, like, I'm sorry, there's no comparison with Sean Couturier at the moment. Anze Kopitar, like, still putting up points.
Yeah.
Still a defensive force, probably going to win it, or at least he's going to be a finalist. Face-offs, totally like top guy on his team still. Like he's front and center in engine of that, of the LA Kings. You look at Alexander Barkov, same kind of deal with the Florida Panthers. Like Coots is just, the offensive game just isn't quite
gone.
And I know it's hard to pick on him because of how much time that he's missed and whatnot. But I mean, listen, we brought up those stats, you know, days before he got benched in our last batch of recordings. And I mean, it wasn't, you know, I didn't expect him to get benched or anything, but the numbers don't lie. Like he was pretty bad for the, you know, January and February.
But he was atrocious.
And he finally got called to task. And you know what? It's like, I think it was Katie on the Noah and Katie show with you, Dan, that said it right. If he was not the captain, everybody would have been okay with the benching.
Yep.
Like, you know what? Hey, it's happened to everybody. It's happened to Atkinson. It happened to Konechny. It happened to Hayes last year. It's happened to a bunch of different players. And now it's Kutz's turn. But because he was named the captain, literally 4 or 5 weeks, 30-something days.
34 days.
That became an issue. And it turned it into something way bigger than it really should have been. And that's the whole thing. I think I read somewhere, it was a French journalist, I think, for RDS, which is the Quebec TSN. And he said that the last captain that was scratched from a game was Ed Jovanovski.
Oh, my God. Yes, in the 90s.
With the Vancouver Canucks. Amazing. And it was like, and it's like, wow, like you just don't see captains get torched like that. And Coots did. Like, message was definitely sent by Tortorella. And, you know, and it became a firestorm.
Couturier's last goal was February 10, and he's only scored 2 goals since the Christmas break.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yep. 1C.
Yeah. And, like, you know, and this, I'm sure we talked about this at the time, but, you know, the question that boiled in my mind through this whole thing is, why did you name this guy captain in the first place? You know, the thing, I wrote a piece about this either last week, 2 weeks ago, whenever it was now, but, like, Tortorella made it so clear that we're not having a captain. No captains, we're not doing it. Nobody's worth it. And then just out of the blue, one day in February, they name him captain. The guy who's been here for 15 fucking years, they name him captain out of the blue. And, you know, the one theory that I heard from the fans was that it didn't come from Tortorella. It came from above. You know, it was right. Briere and Jones' call, or one of them, both of them, whatever, that they need a captain, which seems plausible. It was a few days before the Stadium Series. I think the idea that they champion in this culture to what it was, you name somebody captain 3 or 4 days before the Stadium Series, you can go on national TV and go, look how great this culture is. We just named a captain, you know, and that didn't happen. They got their ass kicked in the Stadium Series and Couturier's been a piece of shit ever since. But, you know, the idea there kind of makes sense. But, you know, I don't know. I why even bother? Why not give it to Konechny? Why not just hold your ground and not have a fucking captain? Just hand out a bunch more A's. Why do you have to give the guy to the C who's old and broken down? You know, Couturier did come out of the gate hot, but the guy's 31 years old. He's got like 800 NHL games under his belt. He played some of the hardest minutes in the NHL for the past 10 years, missed the last 2 with back problems, and you give the guy the C. No shit, his play decreased. He's still there for 6 more years, by the way. What, did this guy just remain captain for the next 6 years? Is that just what happens now? Do they strip him eventually? It's such a ridiculous concept that they even bothered to name this guy captain. It was a move that was dumb at the time and blew up in their face 34 days after they named him. Why'd they do it?
I think it's inexplicable, Dan. I agree completely. It is completely inexplicable why this individual was named captain, given the totality of the circumstances of what the head coach has stated for the past year and a half or 2 years as he's been here, what the rhetoric has been from the front office in terms of allowing the coach to make those decisions. I don't know if the roster said, hey, randomly this day in February, we need to anoint Sean Couturier with the C. I don't know if this locker room has that kind of mentality that they're just aching for a captain and somebody spoke up and said, let's give it to Sean. I highly doubt that that happened. So, Yeah, I guess, I mean, did it come from above? I guess possibly, but still, I think that that's inconsistent with what John Tortorella does. And he's the one that is going to either decide that or work with the players to decide that. So it doesn't make any sense. And this was bound to happen with Couturier. I mean, I've been watching this guy all season, and you know, you start looking at his production and stuff, or lack thereof, and it's like, what the hell is going on here? How the hell is this like your 1C that is getting like a point like every 13 games or something, just non-existent from a point production standpoint? And then why should this person be anointed this leadership role? Because then, like you mentioned, Dan, this is going to stick with him. They are not going to take this away from him as long as he is on the roster. So he's either going to have the C for the next 6 years and it's going to be just horrendous to watch, or the shit's going to hit the fan at some point and the Flyers are going to either buy him out or figure out a way to trade him to a team with his permission. I don't know, but this is not going to be a good ride for the next however many years with him as the captain here. It's a nonsense move. This is supposed to be a new chapter, new team, new culture, and you gave it to a guy that was a key cog in the shitty culture that was here for however many years.
Isn't
and I think
that
you
fucking
and Nick had
wild.
Mentioned this too.
Like, yeah, yeah, it drives me nuts is the idea that you're championing your culture. Oh, the culture's so great. The previous culture was so shitty. It's so bad. This culture's so good now. Scott Laughton's been your fucking only A for the last year and a half, and then you give the C to Sean Couturier. They've been here since 2011 and 2012, respectively. So they're clearly the culture wasn't that bad if these two have been here the whole time. They've been on the roster for 15 years.
Yeah.
So what? That logic doesn't even make any sense when you put any thought into it. Oh, it drives me nuts. I hate this topic because it doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't, and there's a lot of different ways to even look at this. So did the choice for Coots as the captain come from above with little or no input from the head coach, considering what the head coach's comments have been all season long? Kind of strange. What about the benching? Was that Torts' call? And then Briere and Jonesy really didn't have much to say about it. Because he is, after all, in charge of the players on the ice, and he gets to make the lineup decisions. That's his call as coach. There was the whole thing about Sean Couturier's comments with the reporter. I didn't even hear what it was, but a lot of people were upset about, they called it not very captain-like, his comments.
He was a gigantic fucking piss baby. I don't remember what the exact comments were, but yeah, he was basically, yeah, this sucks. I hate it. I don't want to do this. Tortorella didn't tell me. Yeah, very, very.
It was significant. He was like, I don't know why this is happening. I'm doing everything that I can. And then it's like, oh, did you talk to Torts? And he's like, well, kind of. Or
yeah,
he's like,
yeah, he said he didn't talk, that Torts had not talked to him, which I thought was interesting because I believe we had the same situation with Morgan Frost earlier in the year when Tortorella said, we've talked about it. And then the media asked Morgan Frost, like, we never talked about it. And I'm pretty sure the same thing ultimately happened here with Couturier when Tortorella said, we talked about it. And Sean Couturier said, no, he didn't.
And like, Frost did something that Couturier didn't do. There was a report, too, that Frost went into Torts' office one-on-one and asked for an explanation at some point. And, like, that was kind of like, I don't know if it was like a watershed moment, but it was a moment that I think John Tortorella maybe started to get some more respect for him, and Frost started to play better shortly thereafter. And I don't know if Couturier has done, because that's not like these guys. Sean Couturier does not have the personality to be a captain of an NHL team. I can say that. I've seen captains. I haven't been on teams, but in my opinion, a good captain in this league has to have some sort of alpha mentality, a verbal mentality. This meek, shy, like lead by example shit does not work. We've seen it with some other players here, and Sean Couturier has been on those teams, and I do not think that style of leadership in a league at the NHL is effective at all. So really bad choice with that. And this is kind of what he does. You know, it's like, oh, well, the coach didn't really tell me. And, you know, we kind of talked, but not really. And I'm not sure where I stand. And like, dude, fucking grow up. Like, either you're going to be the captain and figure this shit out on your own and take charge of this, or you're going to be a passenger here. And you could have said no to the captaincy. They could have offered it. And behind closed doors, he could have said, oh, you know what? I don't think it's for me. I think we should wait or give it to Lawton or something. But no, he took it. And there's responsibility with that. And playing dumb like that in front of the media and not figuring out why you're fucking benched, that is not captain-like.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's the thing, too, is a guy that's been named captain, you know, 34 days prior, you'd think that he would be more measured and calculated in his response with the media. And instead, he came off whiny.
Yep.
Like a big grade A bitch. And it's like, dude, like at some point, like you have to understand that, you know, this is a big responsibility. And now it's not necessarily about you. You're the conduit between the coach and the other players on the team. And there's an elevated sense of responsibility there for the captain, for him. And he, in that moment, did not pass that test. Granted, I'm sure he was upset, but I guarantee you there's been captains throughout NHL history that have not been thrilled or upset, you know, have not been thrilled with coaches and their decisions, but they kind of toe the line and they walk the, it's a very political kind of thing that they got to do. And he kind of didn't pass that captain test at that moment. And I do think that it's kind of strange. Like at the time, I definitely didn't agree with scratching Couturier. I thought it was an unnecessary risk because if the players on this team basically rally around Sean Couturier and kind of shut out the coach in a season like this, where, you know, you're over exceeding expectations, playoffs are within reach, and then this happens. I thought that that was kind of a crazy kind of, you know, risk to take. But to truth be told, Torts has always had this ability to push the right buttons and to know exactly what makes these guys tick for whatever reason. It's unorthodox. It defies, you know, standard logic, but he really has a pulse on what makes these guys go, because since he's done that, the team has been markedly better as a whole. And that's across, you know, forwards, defensemen, goaltending, everything. They've been a lot better since that Couturier thing. And it's like, wow, he did that, but he knew exactly what he was doing. And it was a very calculated risk to him, but it might've seemed very unorthodox and crazy to people outside looking in.
It's hard for me to like get my mind around, and I see you're saying, Manny, and you're probably right, but like this notion of this three-dimensional chess that John Tortorella plays by, you know, I'm going to create some ridiculous issue and fight with a key player on this team in order to somehow solidify the other guys against me and push their will all towards it. Like, I can see that to some extent, but for fuck's sake, is that necessary? I mean, my God, like it's like a battle tactic or something. And I guess I could see it potentially happening. I just don't know if, like, when you look at successful teams in recent history, like the Mike Sullivan teams, the Jared Bednar teams, you know, what's his face down in Tampa Bay?
Cooper, John, like, Cooper.
Right. John Cooper teams. These guys don't do that. Like, why do you need to do that?
You have to create a hostile work environment to drag something out of your players.
Why are you doing that? Why don't you just make a team that can win? Like, is this necessary to go to this length to get all this shit out of these players? Is this really necessary? I mean, there's going to be collateral damage from that sort of thing. Now, granted, if this was, for example, let's say that Torts was the coach of like the Penguins. And it's like, look, we've got like one more year here with Crosby and Malkin, and we're trying to just squeeze that last bit of blood out of the stone. You know, it's all hands on deck. Whatever you need to do to make them do that towards do it. Like in that situation, I could see that. But in like in year one of a rebuild, to have this kind of coach do these kind of tactics, and I think giving John Tortorella some level of credit that he is playing three-dimensional chess is favorable, but let's just assume that's what he did. I think you go down that road and it still doesn't make any sense for this team to do that sort of stuff. It's just really just why? Like, what are the lasting effects on this? Where does it really get you at the end of the day? You know, I guess you can squeeze more out of the team for the season, but like, where does this take you like 3 or 4 years from now? I think it goes nowhere and just creates, like you said, a hostile environment for no reason.
Yeah. I just, you know, and it was funny how, I don't remember what their record was, you know, when from the day they scratched a turret currently, but it's been pretty favorable. They've played pretty well, all things considered, before this Montreal game. And there were people like, oh, he's a genius. It sparked him what it wanted. It's just, you know, the cards just so happen to fall in a favorable manner here where the team did their thing. If they lost all these games, people would have been fucking livid at this, right? So, I'm sure it sparked something. I'm sure there's some kind of reply from the team that they wanted to play well, you know, and prove Tortorella wrong, or whatever the, you know, ultimate goal of whatever it is they're doing. But yeah, it's a power play from Tortorella, essentially.
Yep.
He's in charge. I'm making the rules. Don't fall against me. I'm the face of this franchise and we're doing this and that. And yeah, this has to be the reason why these guys don't last in the modern day NHL for coaching. Because they do shit like this, and it eventually is just, it's not going to work anymore. You may respond the first time they scratch Sean Couturier. What happens the next time they scratch Sean Couturier? The players are going to go, God damn, this guy keeps scratching our captain. You know, we're not going to play up for him anymore. We're just going to give up entirely and fall back. Like, it's just, it's a very, like, I'm sure there's some kind of method to the madness. Because with John Tortorella, I think there typically is. But it's also one of those things that it doesn't make nearly as much sense from the outside as I think they think it does. So I don't know, but it was a baffling move, baffling way to go about this. They scratched him for 2 games, and I don't know if they fumble down the stretch here. Do they try it again? Do they scratch Couturier again if he just continues to suck, or is that, you know, he just in the lineup every night from now on, and they try someone else? I don't know. Who the hell knows? That's what happens when
it's
all
hard
your
to
roster
say
sucks.
Because you have. It's hard to say because all the beat writers are saying, well, actually, if you look at his stats, he's actually doing quite well, and he did this and that. And yeah. It's like, so, like, I can't get an accurate representation of what's going on because the coach is telling me one thing, and all the beat writers are still saying that, oh, my God, this is still the Selke guy. He's on his way to another Selke. Why would you bench him? Oh, it's bullshit. So, like, it's really difficult for fans and for commentators to get a handle on the situation because you have these two extremes going on at the same time.
I think you hit the nail right on the head there, Mike. Like, it's so hard to get a read on some of the things surrounding this team because you're right. Like, you go and you've got, you know, Meltzer and O'Connor and other guys. And you know what? They all have their things that they're really good at and it's positive. But like, I did see those exact quotes. Like, well, Couturier has actually been really good the last 2 weeks. He doesn't have puck luck. And it's like, really? The guy's head is, he's playing on the fourth line and he's got fucking 10 minutes of ice time. Like, really? That's puck luck? That's fucking like,
yeah.
But there's the advanced stats that get spewed out and it becomes like we're trying to build like a story here or a narrative. But then contrarily, and it's kind of goes to what Dan was going to with Torts and his methods and how, yes, it does create antagonism between the coach and individuals on the team at certain points. And there is a shelf life to that. It does work, but then it stops working at some point. The thing is that then you go to a press conference and then media people will ask, hey, what'd you think of Sean Couturier tonight? Or what'd you think about this guy? I don't know. I got to look at the tape. I don't know. I thought it was okay, I guess. Not sure. He doesn't really get into specifics. I don't know. I thought he played hard out there. And it's like, okay. So you're not really getting the coach's assessment either. Mm-hmm. You're kind of getting a very vague, kicking up the, what do they call it? Muddying the waters kind of around what that player's doing. And then you've got the beat writers out there that work for the team are spinning like this endless positivity about how great he's playing and all this. And like, you don't really know what to kind of make of it either way.
He doesn't justify his actions. And that's, God, that's such a frustrating aspect with Tortorella is like, if you're going to do this, if you're going to scratch Sean Couturier, your captain, your theoretical best player, even though that's far from the truth these days. And then you go into, you go into the media availability in the post game, and you just go, "Nah, I made the choice. It's my call. It's between us." And it's like, yep, you know, you can't do that. You got to give some kind of method for what it is you're doing here when you make that kind of call. That was a national fucking story that Sean Couturier was scratched. The Flyers scratched their new captain, Sean Couturier. Everybody talked about that. And he goes, "Nah, it's between us." You can't do shit like that. You need to, you don't have to give me your exact battle plans, but some kind of thought out answer for why you're doing the shit you're doing. Mm. You know, that's all I want, and that shouldn't be that heavy of a fucking ask either.
Yeah, when he starts doing that stuff, it stops being funny to me, and I'm just like, I don't want you here anymore.
Yeah,
because you need to figure out a way as a head coach. I know you have to control the locker room, the players, a lot of things, but also there's a huge public relations aspect to what you do as a head coach. You are a huge spokesperson for your organization, for your players, for your team. And you're talking to all your constituents and all your season ticket holders, whether you think you are or not, but you are every time you step to that microphone. And when you provide not answers like that on a repeated basis with respect to major things going on in the organization, you lose credibility and you seem like a total jackass. And I don't want a jackass as my coach who's going to treat me like a piece of shit. If I'm going to go down there and spend money and I have no idea what's going on with the team because the coach wants to be a dickhead up in front of the press. Like, at some point, you got to figure out equilibrium there. And I know, like you said, Dan, you can't reveal everything, and I totally understand that. There's a lot of things that have to stay behind closed doors. But when there are big moves like this, you better have some answers for the media and for your season ticket holders and for all the people that follow this team, because without us, you guys don't have anything. So the fact that he repeatedly seems to not understand that, that's going to start to annoy me. And that's kind of what, like, pissed me off about guys like Ron Hextall in management, because he would give these non-answers on major things going on as well. And, like, that's what really, really, really makes me angry when it comes to coaches and front office people. And you look at, you know, the people that are doing it well in Philadelphia, who I think do a pretty good job giving the fans stuff, like the Dave Dombrowskis, the John Middletons, the Howie Rosemans. You're getting good information from those guys. Again, they don't share everything, but they give you enough so you feel like you're understanding why they're doing the things they're doing. And the Flyers still haven't figured out a way to do that. I don't know if Danny can do that yet. He's too inexperienced. And John is just a complete dickhead. And I don't think he ever understood how to do that with fans.
66% of people, by the way, think Ryan Ellis has the better foot speed than Sean Couturier right now.
This is a scientific poll.
Ryan Ellis's doctor gave a thumbs up and retweeted it. It's interesting about, because we've talked ad nauseum about the role that culture plays and good vibes with this locker room, but especially culture. And sort of that's the culture that John Tortorella has kind of instilled in this locker room. And you know what? The results are there. Like, they're winning games, and it's, I know that there's faults, and he certainly is not a perfect person nor coach. I'm a fan. I do understand where people get frustrated with him, and I've gotten frustrated with him a couple of times this season as well. With culture, though, if he ever goes or if he's gone, then does this kind of fester and stay with this group? And, you know, Mike, you mentioned John Cooper and Tampa Bay. I remember hearing an interview with John Cooper. I don't remember if it was on 32 Thoughts or not, but he was talking about how after they had won the Stanley Cup, and they're trying to motivate the guys to, you know what, you don't want to just be one and done. You want to win a second one. And then kind of in that third year saying, guys, we've done two. Now, if we go for three, like, how many teams have gotten three in a row? Like, he's really pushing buttons. But he described there was a game that they just got completely outplayed in, like, the first two periods. And I don't know if it was Jeff Merrick or whatever. I asked him, he goes, "So what happened?" And he goes, "Well, I went into the locker room and I didn't say a damn thing." And he goes, "You didn't say anything?" And he goes, "Nope." He goes, "I didn't have to. I just walked in there, stood there, And Steven Stamkos stood up and fucking laid into everybody and said that it was not acceptable, that this team is a Stanley Cup defending champion, and to go out there and put forth an effort like that was a disgrace, and that all these players getting paychecks should be fucking embarrassed that this is happening to them, and that has to be stopped right now.
Yep.
And it was like, John Cooper was like, I was so happy because I don't have to say anything. The leadership group in Tampa with Stamkos and Hedman and Kucherov and Point and all these guys that are there, they already know. They know what the standard is. They know what the expectation is. They don't need John Cooper doing any kind of antics. They don't need him to barely do anything. They just need him to go out there with plays and what to work on. And he's overseeing things. He's not micromanaging anybody. He doesn't have to. And that's a different kind of culture. And I think that when we aspire for a real culture on this team, that's the kind of culture I want. And I don't see Coots standing up and like blasting somebody and doing right that on. Kind of stuff. And knowing that, you know what, Torts is going to be mad. I'm going to take this one right now because this has got to stop.
Yeah, I think that's such a great example, Manny, of how a successful organization and a successful group of players handles adversity and is able to persevere through some of the downs during a season. And I cannot imagine in a million years a guy like Sean Couturier doing anything remotely close to that in a circumstance that's similar.
No.
I can't imagine Claude Giroux doing that either. I cannot imagine really anybody on any of the Flyers teams over the past, I don't know, 11 or 12 years since maybe a Chris Pronger that would do something like that in the locker room, that is willing to verbalize what's going on and verbally say, look, this is unacceptable, and call out names and hold people accountable, and create, you know, that type of culture, that type of environment. Yeah, I think that's what they need to do. Like, it's not the coach, because you have to figure out a relationship. And this is so great what Stamkos has with Cooper, is the relationship is there. So they don't have to say stuff. They kind of know what each other is going to do. And I think that level of leadership with a coach and a captain is so critical. I mean, I could see somebody like MacKinnon doing that as well. Yeah. And you know, the list goes on with some of these guys. I don't really know the culture at Edmonton. I'm not sure if McDavid does that. Draisaitl might do it, but they haven't gotten to that level quite yet as the Colorados and Tampas. But yeah, I mean, I think that's the blueprint right there. That's what we want.
And going to Dan's point, I believe John Cooper is the longest tenured coach in the NHL
by far. Yes.
So, I mean, like, what he's doing works, but it also helps that he's got the right ingredients in that recipe in that Tampa dressing room, that they're all on the same page together and they know exactly what to do. And you even look at Tampa Bay recently, they've been sleepwalking most of the season and they've been pretty damn unimpressive. But I mean, the last 2 weeks or 3 weeks,
those playoffs come around, it's time to go.
Yep. They flick a switch and you know what? It's time for business. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think we'll call this one here. It's going up on a Saturday, maybe Sunday. I guess it's a holiday, maybe Saturday. Who knows? Anyway, just did a show with Dylan. You can check that out. There'll be plenty of stuff next week. I'm sure Papa will be back this week. I don't know when, but I think he will be. Plenty of shit on the website, brotherlypuck.com, at DanTheFlyerFan, at brotherlypuck_pod, DanTheFlyerFan_jerseys over on Instagram, and tip-to-tip-pod as well, at tip-to-tip-pod for the new Shane show coming soon. Plenty of stuff going up now if you want to check it out on Apple and Spotify. And Mike, where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at Flyer_AF.
Manny?
At Manny Benavides. And as always, brotherlypuck.com. The latest prospect report should be out right now. Go check it out.
All right, everyone. Until next time, goodbye and good night.